Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to Culinary Atlanta series on Atlanta Business Radio. Stone Payton, Jeno Pry, and Sky Estroff here with you this afternoon. This is going to be a fantastic segment. Let's get it kicked off by checking in with a taste of Atlanta, folks. Sky, what's going on over there?
Hello, we've got some big things coming up this week. Taste of Atlanta tickets go on sale this Friday.
All right. So how does all that work? And get us caught up on dates, process, all that.
Okay. So Taste of Atlanta, if you don't know, it's Atlanta's largest food festival. It's going to be our 16th year. So we're celebrating our Sweet 16, hence our guest today. And we're back and better than ever. We're having a big move to Fourth Ward Park across from Pont City Market this year. So we're really excited. We're going to have over 40,000 attendees like we've had all of our other years. And we've already signed on over 50 restaurants. So we're really excited about that too. But tickets will be on sale at tasteofatlanta.com this Friday. 16th. Get it? Sweet 16.
That was pretty sneaky. So 40,000 people. Are we going to have enough food?
Yes.
And I know Jen wants to know, are we going to have enough gelato?
Gelato and weather. Is the sun going to be out? Do you arrange for that?
Knock on wood, yes. But typically the third weekend in October, we're going to be October 20th through the 22nd. That's been a good weekend for us. So we're really happy we snagged it.
And weather's usually nice here in the Atlanta area that time of year. That's marvelous.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Before we came into the studio and went live on air, I was telling everybody in the lobby that I was in Phoenix this past week. And it's hot in Phoenix.
Yeah, it's a little bit hot in the summer in the desert on
yes,
that part
is.
Of the country.
But it's very exciting. We have a new studio going up in Phoenix. And so we want to give a shout out to Karen Nowicki and that crowd. And I don't know, is there a Taste of Phoenix? Is there something like that? Probably.
I'm going to have to Google that. But
there
if not, maybe we'll make something happen over there.
All right, Sky, you brought some folks with you who are going to be participating in all this, right?
Yes, yes, we do. We have the brains between Revolution Gelato here. Excuse me, Honeysuckle Gelato here. That was my brain fart of the day. It is Monday. We have the brains behind Honeysuckle Gelato. So if y'all would love to introduce yourselves and tell a little bit about your amazing brand and how it's all begun here.
Sure. I'm Wes, and here with my business partner, Jackson. And really, the business started behind Jackson's experience, so I don't want to steal his thunder. I'd love for him to kind of tell us.
Eating
tell
gelato us, or making it?
Making more so than eating, but okay. Yeah, it's a combination. But no, I found myself in New York City about, I guess that was 2009, so yeah, do the math on that one. But yeah, fell into a job doing gelato production for a guy who had a shop on the Lower East Side, so we supplied mostly restaurants wholesale. And had just a little window shop up there, but did that for about 2 years. Really enjoyed the process of creating gelato and making new flavors and stuff like that. Wes and I are childhood friends. We've known each other since about second grade. And we'd always talked about doing something together, but we just never had sort of an outlet for it. So
I wish one of my second grade buddies would call me up with a winning business idea and say, Stone, you're in.
Right.
Right. How cool was that?
It was great. It was great. And like Jackson said, we just kind of fell into it. And whenever he would come home and visit, he bought a little tabletop gelato machine and would make stuff at his parents' house. And, you know, we loved it. And we kept kind of looking around. At that point, we really thought, maybe our window of opportunity to open a business together had passed. But when we started looking around, we noticed there's been one gelato shop in Atlanta our entire life, and that's it. And food was becoming, you know, very important for people to buy locally and everything. So we really saw a great opportunity to do something fun and unique and different and challenging. But we saw the opportunity that was there. You know, like we could sell to restaurants. You know, we started with a food truck, which was a ton of fun, way too much work, but a ton of fun. And really, you know, because of Jackson's experience, you know, we were able to you know, translate that into something that we think is just great. And we love doing it. So
I got to understand, I live in Marietta. Well, temporarily, I live down the street. You know, my wife burned my house down. That's a whole nother story. She didn't mean to. But I don't understand, what's the difference between gelato and ice cream?
So less air, less fat is the easiest way to look at it. So okay. most American ice cream will have like a 13 to 15% butter fat content. Our stuff, and gelato is normally from 4 to 8. Ours is about 8%. And it also, so when you think about churning ice cream or churning gelato, it sort of expands as it freezes. Most American stuff is sort of the overrun is how you calculate that. So you put 1 gallon in, you get 2 gallons out is 100% overrun. Ours is closer to 25%. So it's a denser, richer product, which should give you a better mouthfeel.
So honeysuckle equals healthy, right?
That's
pretty much what you're saying.
I can add an extra scoop on.
If you say that, yeah. I'll just nod.
Okay, I'll just promote that. If you buy honeysuckle gelato, it will be healthier than eating ice cream,
that,
right?
That is accurate.
Okay, yeah. All right. So we can get with that. Yeah.
Is that one of the flavors, honeysuckle? What's the idea behind that name?
Yeah, so the idea was... We still, and to this day, we get a lot of sort of confusion about what gelato is and what it isn't, and especially being in the South. I think in the Northeast, where I was before, it's a lot more common. So when we were coming down here trying to crack that nut, we wanted to offer people a flavor selection that was a lot more, you know, familiar to them. So we're sort of brand ourselves as a Southern-inspired gelato. So, you know, we do a lot of bourbons, brown butters, fresh herbs.
Yeah. We're there.
I was thinking like sweet tea, but, biscuits and gravy. I mean,
yeah, we've done those before.
Yeah, we've done just about everything. Yeah.
Could you market that, Jen?
I could definitely. Tell me, do you have salted caramel?
That's our number one seller.
That's right where I am.
And so that's what I quickly figured out is, you know, we like to do everything in-house. So I had to, in addition to making all the gelato, now we make all our caramels and fudge sauces and jams and stuff like that. So that's been a fun process.
And cookies.
Yeah. So we pretty close to rolling out our line of gelato sandwiches, which should be about another 3 weeks. So.
Okay. 3 weeks. So
quite 3 weeks. Well, a little more than 3 weeks. Yeah.
3 weeks in restaurant terms, right?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Okay. Right.
So what are the bookends on a gelato sandwich?
So we've got a bunch.
You say sandwich down here, right?
So the chocolate chip cookies, obviously, you know, we got to do that. But we have a brownie wafer. We do a pie crust. We've done pound cake, red velvet. I mean, we're going to start, you know, 3 or 4 options and then kind of roll them out and see what works.
All right. So there's the gelato business. There's the gelato, but there's the business. So I want to talk a little bit about the business thing. When he called you, tried to bring you in, I mean, how formed was this thing? Walk us through that a little bit.
Honestly, it kind of felt like a joke at first when we first started talking about it. I was, but when we started looking around, it didn't take too long for us to get serious. And we put a business plan together. We were both working full time. And that time Jackson was still up in New York. I was here in Atlanta. And, you know, after we put the business plan together and as soon as we signed our lease on our production space, that same day I went in and gave my 2 weeks notice, which I do not recommend anyone
aggressive.
Doing. It was I was so excited about getting started that I got a little too far ahead of myself. But it did put us in a situation where at that point, and same with Jackson, you know, he couldn't live in New York and operate a business in Atlanta. So we found ourselves both back here and we picked up a third business partner before we finalized our business plan. So the three of us really found ourselves in a position where it was like, well, if we're not out there pushing gelato, we're not going to eat. So, you know, none of us had jobs. That was our full-time job. As soon as we had an opportunity to work on this full-time, we took it.
All right, but you bit off on this lease. So, I mean, funding, how'd you pull that off?
Friends and family. We got a shoestring budget. And looking back, that's one thing that we probably would have hit the ground looking for a little bit more money, you know? But no, we signed a lease. We built out our kitchen, potentially with permits, maybe not.
I think we need to take his microphone away.
But no, we tried to do it as well as we could with what we had. So, and like I said, the food truck was, or like Wes said, it was a lot of work to get going. But we saw that as sort of our mobile marketing campaign where we could get, you know, face-to-face feedback in a lot of different neighborhoods in and around Atlanta. So we figured out sort of the flavors that worked. What we thought worked wasn't exactly what the customer wanted. So we got, you know, a little give and take there. But and yeah, there was a little bit of cash. And then we were able to spin that into a shop over at Ponce City Market, which we opened, I guess, late September of 15 now. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's where you are now?
Yeah, that's,
well, so
that's
you still have the truck too, or do you,
we still physically own the truck. It has not moved in about 3 years.
Really? I don't think cater parties or anything with it?
Well, it's not necessarily a lack of wanting to do that with the truck. We just don't think the investment to get the truck back up and running is quite worth it at this point. We do cater. We still do a lot of catering, but it's, you know, we've got our own handmade, you know, tabletop setups, and we've got a cart that we use in and around the Ponce City Market area. Okay. So we still do that sort of push, but the food truck is just kind of sitting there.
It's really so pretty. It looks beautiful. Nice on the street.
Yeah.
You know? It does.
It's the mobile museum.
It is.
Yeah. At this point, well, it's no longer mobile, so it's the museum.
And y'all are opening a new production facility along the Beltline, or you're about to, or what's going on with that?
Yeah, well, that's actually a perfect transition, because I think the hope for us is to park the truck outside of that location, take the engine out, and just let it sit.
Okay.
But yeah, so we're down, we're about 2 weeks away from getting our certificate of occupancy at Lee and White, which we've got great neighbors on the way. Wild Heaven Brewing, Monday Night Brewing, American Spirit Whiskey, Southern Age Cheese, Due South Pickles is going down there. Or they're already down there. And then there's another
Banyan Roots Brew Pub is going in. And there are a few other people we can't talk about, but it's going to be wonderful. It's such a great area. Our back door opens up onto the Beltline, so we hope one day we can open up some sort of a tasting room. But for now, we're excited to move our office and production facility down there to allow us to do a lot more
of everything.
More of everything. So we're really, really thrilled to be so close to this.
That is really exciting.
Now, how did y'all make the transition? Because this is something that comes up all the time with clients is, you know, you've got the food truck. The food truck industry is actually, you know, hard to break into because there's only so many events and so many food trucks catching on. How did y'all make that transition from food truck to storefront where people, you know, was...
Yeah, we always had our eye. We always wanted to do retail. Actually, when we wrote our business plan, it was around doing a combination of wholesale with a retail shop. So we were keeping our eye on retail locations, and we came close to almost signing a lease at a couple places. But we thought, you know, at that point, food trucks were extremely popular. We were like, you know what? We don't have to invest as much. We need a production kitchen anyway, even if we have a retail space. So that was one thing we needed to get no matter what. And this is an easier way, a more affordable way. I don't want to use the word cheap, but a more affordable way to start our business and get the brand out there. And like Jackson said, it really allowed us to explore the different areas of Atlanta and keep our eye out and be a little more patient with finding that right retail space. And also allowed us to, not as early as we would have liked, because the food truck just took up so much time, but you know, it allowed us to build a brand to sell to restaurants. You know, so we started selling to restaurants and stores. And then once, you know, the idea of Ponce City Market kind of came to life, we just started pestering them, and we're lucky enough for them to kind of take a bit of a risk on us. But I think it's been great. I mean, that's the spot we wanted to be in, and we were lucky enough to get in there. So,
do you feel like at Ponce? I mean, the hype has not died down a second. Do you agree? Because I feel that way.
Yeah, it's just getting busier. Right. Feels like.
I know the owners of Skyline Park, and I mean, they are saying it's constant.
Madness. I can't even get to brunch up there because the lines are so long. It's hard. It's hard work.
Right. And that was huge for us. Why we really wanted to go there is the quality of chefs and purveyors that were going in. So we wanted to kind of, you know, match that level. And those people are bringing it.
And it seems like you're keeping that mindset consistent with your move on to this new production facility too, because the different purveyors around you are such high level as well. And now that they're your friends, your neighbors, that's really, really cool that you can make new friends in this business from place to place.
Oh yeah. Especially friends that make beer and whiskey. We love them.
Okay. Have you thought about doing like gelato floats with some of the beer or something? You could get creative there.
Yeah. I mean, I think Monday Night has some sort of scotch ales that, you know, would do really well. But we're actually, American Spirit Whiskey has a bourbon that we're going to start using in our bourbon pecan, which is, it's their Fiddler bourbon, which is amazing. And we're excited to roll that out. So
So I guess it's part of your business plan to like taste all of these liquors Absolutely. And alcohols to make sure it goes with your brand. Yeah.
Quality control is number one with everything, especially with the ingredients.
Yes. Got to try a lot of it before you can really add it to your gelato.
Right.
Yeah.
So General Pryor, I didn't mention it when we first introduced you, but you have kind of a pedigree in this whole marketing arena in helping people in the culinary world go to market. Is there a difference in the, I'll call it the get over the hump marketing, which I think these guys have done, and then the marketing going forward? Have you found that to be the case with your clients that you have to recalibrate now at these different phases of the business?
You do. And I mean, like you said, they've kind of gotten over the initial hump and have, you know, they now can bring their brand to people and people are wanting their brand rather than them wanting people to take their brand on. And, you know, especially with, you know, social media and things like that, it's now they're past the building the fan base. It's now keep the fans entertained, keep them engaged, and keep the word spreading through word of mouth or sharing. And that's the, you know, what this when you get to this point, it's a great thing for your business because people don't realize, you know, that they think they've got to just get to that point and build that base, but you've got to continue that base and keep feeding into it.
Well, it occurs to me where that, what you're describing makes a lot of sense to me. And it occurs to me that where that could really break down is when it's not the two of you serving me my gelato or talking to me about our partnership and doing these floats that we talked about. Are there other people on the team, employees or other people, or is it just the two of you right now?
No, well, as I mentioned earlier, we have a third business partner. She does, you know, a lot of our local sales and she's our marketing person as well, but we've got a great manager at our store. We've got a great production team at our production facility, and we've got a bunch of great employees working.
And it just happened.
You just got a bunch of great employees.
You can't. Well, I'm not going to let that. This is what our people want to hear about.
Right?
How do you build a team with a great manager and great employees? How do you do that?
It takes time. I mean, it takes a lot of time. And when we opened the shop, I think, each one of us, the three of us, worked for 50-something straight days at the shop. So 7 days a week, nonstop. Wow. You know, so one, it's, you know, we actually have a few employees that started there when we opened that are still there.
Really?
So they know us. Yeah. I mean, everybody over there knows us. And, you know, they know that we're around a lot, which helps. But it took us a while to find the right manager. And it really takes time and talking as a group, defining what you want that person to be, you know, how you want, you know, them to act and represent your brand. Because once, to your point, if we're not there all the time, so we have to make sure that, especially at Pond City Market, that the people there are representing our brand to the best of their ability and how we want it represented. It helps on the kitchen side. It's a little easier because that's where our office is and we're there all the time. You know, and Jackson, with his background, he oversees all of our production. So the majority of our employees over there are production employees. So he's a great resource for them. And he's always lending a hand when it comes to that sort of stuff. So
I mean, you're going to run out of second grade buddies that you know and trust and love, right? Pretty soon. So you've got to have some structure, some rigor, some discipline around how you recruit, develop, retain these folks. Jackson, do you have some secret sauce and all that?
There's no secret sauce. Like Wes said, it is just staying on top of people and sort of, you know, demanding the best from them. We've been lucky, actually. Our main production guy right now is another friend that we knew growing up.
A third grade friend or a second grade
friend?
No,
he's actually
high school.
I wish I would have been so much nicer.
We knew his brother in middle school. So
yeah. Oh my gosh.
His brother graduated from high school.
Right.
I sure wish I'd have been nicer to people in school now. Maybe I can have them surrounding me. Yeah, go ahead.
No, just beyond that, we've hired a lot of our kitchen staff from a program that was initially run through Westside Works, which is a culinary. They have a culinary training program for people sort of looking to get their life back on track. So, we love our team. We have moments just like any team or any family has where, you know, people can get a little bit, you know, a little sensitive, but we try to take each day and just crank out the best product that we can. So that's kind of what keeps us going.
Well, I think you guys obviously are doing it right if you've got employees that have been with you since day one.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you all are obviously treating them well, and I think that's important.
I hope so. I mean, we try to. You know, I mean, I think we have enough employees that have been working with us long enough to be able to have an open dialogue with us, you know, when they might want to see some things improved. They don't feel like they have to.
When Jackson does something wrong, they come to you and tell you.
Right, exactly. Exactly. And then I'll silently complain about it and we'll just go along our way.
There you go.
I also find it important with smaller businesses and restaurants that y'all were saying in the inception of business, you worked every position and mm-hmm. you did it for a while. So you really know each position intimately. And I think that like that can get lost in a corporate job or something that's a bigger company. The people just don't know the expectations of each position and how much hard work it takes to play each role in a company.
Exactly. But I think sort of the flip side of that is now that we're getting to a point where we can back out into our own sort of specific roles. And we're able to sort of spend money with designers and, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like all the places that we kind of had to shoestring it at first, we're seeing how valuable using other professionals let them do what they do.
That it must be a nice relief though at the same time.
Really it's huge. And, you know, but having the perspective of when we ask somebody to do something, we know what it takes. You know, I mean, we know we're not asking too much because we've done it.
You've been in the trenches and keep their respect.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can't fly the plane when you're working on it.
Right.
Let the experts be the experts.
Right.
Yeah.
So what compelled you to get involved with Taste of Atlanta, aside from Sky's sunny disposition?
Right. Well, you know, Taste of Atlanta was the first big thing we really did as a business. We took our food truck out there, and it was one of those moments where, you know, you kind of have your milestones once you open a business. You know, it's like, okay, we remember the day we first got permitted. We remember like the first time we took the truck out, and then going to Taste of Atlanta, we were like, oh, wow, you know, we're playing with the real businesses of Atlanta. So it was really kind of a fun experience for us to, you know, at one point we all kind of walked off the truck one at a time just to go see the line, you know, just to look at like a long line outside of our truck. And we could take a picture and be like, oh my God, we have, you know, like we're here, you know, we're part of the Atlanta food scene now. So it's been a lot of fun to see, you know, Taste of Atlanta grow. We're certainly excited that it's across street from Pont City Market this year because that's where our retail is. But, you know, for us, it was kind of one of those milestone things, and we've always been thankful for that.
All right. Where can our listeners go to get their hands on some fantastic gelato? And what are the hours, that kind of thing? What's the best way to connect with you guys and become part of the gelato family / culture around here?
Pont City Market's the easiest place to find us. That's our retail shop. We've got 182 square feet of action over there. And we apologize for the line. It is that good, though, so stay in line. And then beyond that, we sell pints, places like Whole Foods, Sabi Market, stuff like that. So
if you go to our website, honeysucklegelato.com, mm-hmm. It has our current menu up at our store along with our hours, and it also has a kind of a map feature on there with a list of all the stores we're in the different states in the Southeast.
All right. And then do Jen and I need to get working on a bacon recipe, or is there already one in the works?
We've been selling maple bacon since almost day one.
There you go. Should have known. Fantastic. Right. But I can get this at Whole Foods.
Yeah. So we have, we're actually redoing our pint lineup. We're going to take some off and add some new ones. And that should be in the next 2 months or so. But yeah, we got some cool flavors coming back out, and some standards like salted caramel, which are staying on. So,
well, congratulations, gentlemen, obviously on your success today. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for coming. Hey, how about staying with us while we talk to our next guest?
Absolutely.
I'd love to.
All right. Next up on Culinary Atlanta this afternoon, we have with us Director of Partnerships with The Giving Kitchen, Miss Naomi Green. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
We are doing well, and it's good to hear from you. Want to learn all about The Giving Kitchen, but first, I want to get your reaction to this gelato thing.
So, interestingly enough, I've known Wes probably since pretty close to inception for them, and they have
I thought you were going to say second grade.
A little bit further along than that. At least 5 years, though. Yeah. And we're proud to have them at one of our largest annual fundraisers every single year. They've been our gelato partner there, and always bring on the heat. So we're happy to have it.
All right, lay it on us. Mission, purpose of the Giving Kitchen. What are you guys out there doing?
Yep. So the mission of the Giving Kitchen is specifically to provide crisis support to any greater Metro Atlanta area restaurant worker who has an unanticipated hardship. So all of that makes sense if you've ever worked in a restaurant before. If you haven't worked in a restaurant, here's how it goes. You're a server, you're a bartender, you're a line cook, you're a chef or an owner of a restaurant, and you have an unanticipated hardship like an accident or an illness or an injury that prevents you from being able to work. You may have the greatest insurance coverage in the country, but that still doesn't cover your cost of living for time missed from work. So that's where the Giving Kitchen jumps in and tries to save the day. We specifically pay rent or mortgage and utilities for any of those restaurant workers who have a crisis that's preventing them from working. And it's really important that it can be an at-work or away-from-work injury. This is not workers' comp. This is not insurance-related in any way. We're just a classic nonprofit. Our mission is just simply to help restaurant workers in crisis.
And how did this thing get off the ground?
So about 5 years ago, actually 5 years ago, there was a local chef, a popular guy. His name was Ryan Heidinger. He had been best known for his work at Float Away Cafe. And towards the end of his career was working at Muss and Turner's and went to the doctor with flu-like symptoms and came back with a stage 3 cancer diagnosis. And so his restaurant group did what restaurants have done historically for their employees since the beginning of restaurant time, I imagine, which is they stood up to support their own. They decided to host a little party, I'm air quoting for those of you in the radio world, and invite some of their closest friends, again, air quotes in heavy play here, and with a fundraising goal of $26,000. Ryan had been given a one-year, you know, kind of prognosis on his cancer diagnosis, and their goal was to take, you know, how am I going to pay my rent and how am I going to pay my bills out of the equation completely and allow him to completely focus on his medical care and on his healing process. And on that night at the very first Team Heidi, which is also where we bumped into the Honeysuckle crew, we raised almost $250,000. Yep, a lot of money. And by all means, at the hands of, you know, 50 of Atlanta's finest restaurants and chefs and 16 of Atlanta's finest bartenders who came out to do an event for a private individual, just for a guy. This wasn't benefiting a nonprofit organization at that time. This was just one guy that was in trouble and needed the community to rally behind him. And boy, did they.
So, Jen, question for you on something like this. They've got a great thing going. The people in this ecosystem just rallied around this. They raised plenty of money. So they obviously kind of had their own machine in motion. And it makes me think that, okay, now what you don't want to do is lose that momentum. You want to provide for the care and feeding and let these people know how much you appreciate it and that you don't take this kind of support for granted. So again, almost the same question I asked you a few minutes ago. Are we looking at a different type of marketing, a different set of strategies, or what do you think?
Well, it's a little bit different with that being, you know, private individuals coming forward with a, you know, before the nonprofit was in existence. But, you know, now that it is, I tell people, I mean, recognize those sponsors, recognize those partners, because, you know, it benefits everyone. It gets the message out there. And especially in the nonprofit world, it is such a close community. I used to work in the nonprofit sector. And it's all about who you know and you know, kind of advertising. I think the nonprofit world has a hard time with that because they don't want to advertise, you know, and say this person needs this help, you know, but, you know, kind of taking advantage of those names and those partnerships and leveraging them for a good cause. And that can be done, you know, through a variety of different ways.
Okay, Honeysuckle guys, what compelled you to get involved, contribute, be a part of that early on?
Well, we actually knew Ryan. So they had, at that point, Ryan and Jenny were doing, a supper club called Staple House out of their house, which has now, if you followed the story, has turned into one of the best restaurants in the country that is Staple House on Edgewood. And if you haven't been, go. It's incredible. But, you know, we kind of met Ryan through the business and would make him and Jenny, you know, some of their desserts from time to time. And, you know, when we heard about the diagnosis, we weren't going to miss it.
So. Well, we'll go, but now I have to send him an invoice, you know, because of the airtime. No, I'm kidding. So you must find this incredibly rewarding work, Naomi. How did you get started with it from the very beginning? Or
yeah, so interestingly enough, I was working for one of the restaurant partners that was called upon to support this very first Team Heidi event. I was at Fox Brothers Barbecue at the time. I was their director of events and marketing, and you know, the Unsake group of restaurant owners, which is the Muss and Turners and the Local Three guys. Unsake to them translates to "it does not suck."
I love it.
Yeah, they're great. And so they called on my owners for some help. And not only did my owners offer to come out and support the event by providing a tasting table for the guests, but they also volunteered me that I would help participate in supporting the event.
You got voluntold.
I got voluntold. And was happy to be a part of something like that. And at that time had no idea that this was the future of that fundraising event. Was really just proud to be a part of seeing the community come together to support one chef. And from there, Ryan and Jenny Heidinger, who were completely humbled by the amount of money that was raised on their behalf, started to kind of go around the city. They heard about other people that were having a crisis, and they stepped up to the plate and said, we have more than we need, and we want to give you some of that. And that eventually formed into the idea of the Giving Kitchen. So Ryan's, the Team Heidi event was at the end of January in 2013. And by the end of May in 2013, we had formed an official nonprofit organization. I immediately joined the board as their events chair. And when they started talking about hiring a staff, left my board position to join the team full time.
And how does it work if someone wants to get involved? Because I know, you know, a lot of times there's sponsorship packages or what? How can someone help out in the giving?
So many layers to help out. So what we know about the Atlanta restaurant industry, there are 240,000 employees in the greater Atlanta restaurant industry. If we could rally 20% of those employees to give $1 a paycheck or $52 a year, we would not fundraise any other money throughout the year because we would raise $2.5 million at the hands of the employees themselves. So that's a huge campaign. We obviously need support in sharing the word about that campaign. And it's twofold because it is our belief that when you are a donor of something, you are more likely to either A, ask for help when you need it, or B, show someone else the doorway to asking for help when they need it. It's kind of like, you know, when you're moving, you see U-Hauls all over the street, or when you want to buy a new car, you mm-hmm. see that car yeah. everywhere. It's just that the awareness level is raised once you become a donor, even at the smallest level. And we've seen that proven to be true. The restaurants that engage on the employee giving side, which we call Multiply Joy, we see more grants going out the door at that restaurant. And so we're able to assist more of their employees. We are fortunate to be the beneficiary of about 40 events around the calendar, including a partnership with the Taste of Atlanta event. So we're very happy. We support their hospitality tent specifically. Our attraction, of course, is how can we connect more with the restaurant workers and the restaurant owners themselves. Taste of Atlanta does an awesome job about setting up a hospitality area specifically for the folks that are down there serving you day in and day out for the weekend. And those guys get a place where they can go and relax and play some games and have some food and drinks available to them. So we volunteer to manage that tent in the past, and Taste has made generous donations to the Giving Kitchen as well, which we're appreciative of. So you can come and volunteer at an event like that. Or you could, you know, you could support us at our Team Heidi event, obviously as a sponsor. We have tons of sponsorship opportunities throughout the year. We're a small staff of 4.5. We have one part-time caseworker. So
those are the best ones?
Yep. A lot of admin tasks go undone at our office. So we constantly, people come and say to us, you know, how can I fulfill my community service hours, or my kid is off for the summer? What can they help do? And so we're happy to have them do simple tasks like, you know, my mom comes in and does filing and makes phone calls to people who have started an application but haven't completed it to say what's going on, what's the hesitation, where's the break here, why haven't you moved this forward? So
working through volunteers, does that present a different set of challenges?
Volunteers, working through volunteers definitely presents a different set of challenges. And having been a volunteer, you know, for many other organizations in my life, I get it. You know, I understand that something else comes along and is maybe a little bit better than the volunteer opportunity that you signed up for. But our volunteers are generally, for the most part, industry connected. And so we love to have their, we're desperate for their support. We absolutely need it. And we love to have them out at events with us because, you know, when you're working with Wes and his team and Wes says, hey, can you pass me a six pan? The volunteers know what that is when they come from the industry. Right. If it's my dad, he has no clue what you're talking about in that moment. So we love all of our volunteers. Our industry volunteers in particular hold a special place with us just because we can use them more actively.
Sky, I have to say, if I had your job, I would weigh 400 pounds. Because I would.
How do you know I don't? You know, it's hard. It takes a balance. I mean, I do eat whatever's put in front of me, though. I never hold back on that. It is part of it. And I want to support all the Atlanta restaurants that are doing great things and making great food. I can't miss out on that.
Well, you do such a, you and your organization do such a fantastic job of supporting the restaurants, but also these kinds of non-profits. So apparently that's just part of the culture at Taste of Atlanta. That's just part of what you guys are about, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. We have been a part of the restaurant community now for the past 16 years, and we want to continue that awesome networking and that awesome sense of community and pride in our food with all the restaurants that we invite to the festival. So we really like to see the restaurants meeting new people and encouraging the new kids on the block to be a part of our event and seeing organizations like the Giving Kitchen come on. And I think, Naomi, we've had volunteers from Giving Kitchen come on and help the different restaurants from year to year. So that's always really nice because you do have those quality volunteers that have worked in the restaurant industry and can help with samples and help with samples.
That's
help with cooking on site. Yeah, Stone, we need volunteers. You should come on. So it's just really nice because Atlanta's sense of restaurant community is just getting stronger and stronger with every passing year. And we love to see that unfold at our festival.
Well, I would think if you're thinking of attending the event next year as a restaurant, there'd be some benefit to going this year and checking things out from a behind-the-scenes kind of view before you go and put your name out there.
Yes, I definitely think so. It's much grander than we can even make it sound from a marketing perspective. So definitely come on out and call us with information or email us before, and we're happy to help and ask questions or answer questions.
All right, Naomi, where should folks go to learn more about the Giving Kitchen and maybe have a conversation with someone on your team about volunteer opportunities or what have you?
So learning how to volunteer or becoming a donor to the Giving Kitchen or just learning more about our mission and our expansion here in the Atlanta area can be found at thegivingkitchen.org, so .org, as with all nonprofits. More importantly, if you are a restaurant worker in crisis or if you know a restaurant worker in crisis, our application is online and it's electronic in two languages, English and Spanish, and can be sourced at fluidreview.thegivingkitchen.org.
Well, thank you so much
for your
service, what you're doing. Keep up the good work. Keep us posted. And we want to continue to have this conversation unfold. So we're going to be keeping tabs on you and yours. Jen, we triple teamed them this time. It wasn't just me and Sky this time around.
Thanks for letting me join in on this.
Well, it was fun to have you. We didn't talk a lot about your work, but you do have a great deal of experience in marketing in general and quite a bit in both the not-for-profit and the culinary area. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, have a conversation with you about your work, what's the best way for them to do that?
Sure. Like we said, my name is Jen O'Pry. I'm the owner of Streamline Consulting Communications. And you can email me at jopry@streamlinecc.net or just hop on our website at www.streamlinecc.net. So, and there's a whole tab on there about franchises because we do a lot of franchises.
All right. Sky, I get so energized every time you come to the studio. You were kind of last minute today because I think you said your navigation thing got a little wacky on you.
If anybody has anything besides Waze that they use and like, let me know because I'm over it. I am deleting it today. I am so done. It's also my fault because I've lived in Atlanta too long to not know any of the roads at this point.
Well, I was bummed, you know, like at 5:10, I'm like, oh man, I really like it when Sky's here. But I was so excited to see you at the elevator. You bring such a marvelous energy to the whole thing. I love the work that you guys are doing. I want to make sure that we leave our listeners once again with coordinates and these things. These tickets go on sale soon
on Friday the 16th for our Sweet 16, and the first 200 people to buy tickets, they're $16 because we're fitting with the theme. So let everyone know, and you can find them at tasteofatlanta.com. So keep up to date there. And follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, too.
All right. Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Jen O'Price, Sky Estroff. Our guests today, Naomi Green, Wes, and Jackson from Honeysuckle, and everyone here at the Business Radio family, saying we'll see you next week on Culinary Atlanta.